Okay, so we're going to talk today about Easter a little bit, because today is Easter. And it's a really important day around the globe. And I think one of the things that fascinates me about Easter is what Christ did today, is he defeated death. It said he was put on the cross and he died. And they put him in the ground, or at least in a cave, and all of a sudden he was gone. And the salvation from death, ultimate death, is what a lot of Christians aspire to. So I did a thing a couple weeks ago, but this is what I found on Christianity and salvation. Salvation from sin through the sacrifice of Jesus. So Jesus purified all the sins of the Christians and then offered them salvation in his resurrection. So Buddhism has a little different take on the whole thing, as you can imagine. Salvation from suffering through the Buddha's teachings. Now, as I studied early Buddhism, I found it interesting that we do not aspire to defeat death as a Buddhist. We aspire to defeat rebirth as a Buddhist. So according to Buddhism, all forms of life, whether form or formless, are ultimately unsatisfactory because they are temporary. That even the Pure Land is temporary in the sense that while you're there, you achieve nirvana, never to be reborn in heaven again. So we don't even aspire to go to heaven. If it happens, we don't reject it, but then we know we're going to have to leave sooner or later, and it will be ultimately unsatisfactory. So the Buddha, in one of his talks, said, "I teach the path to immortality." And when he said that, he was speaking about not how to die. He didn't teach a path on how not to die. Everyone, even the Son of God, Jesus, had to die before he was resurrected. So when the Buddha said, "I teach the path to immortality," he was speaking about, "I teach the path of how not to be reborn ever again." Now, for a Westerner, it's rather uncomfortable to think about it in that way. Because in the West, if you were baptized as a Christian, you were baptized so even if you died as a child without ever hearing a sermon, you still went to heaven. And with that mindset, looking at the idea of never being reborn again, not even in heaven, may not sound like the kind of end you want to have, the kind of salvation that calls to you. So, what does a Buddhist do first in their teaching? The first thing an early Buddhist does, Theravada, is they talk about suffering. They talk about how bad the world is. They talk about all the problems for us in this world started when we were born. And because we were born, we're going to have to get old, we're going to have to get sick, and we're going to have to die. And every time we're reborn, time and time again, we will get sick, we will get old, and we will die. And in between the birth and the death is a whole lot of unsatisfactoriness. It never turns out to be exactly the way we think it should be. And we strive and we hope and we have faith that one day the perfection of the world will be obvious to us and we'll have no more suffering. And it never happens because the world is not perfect. The world, the Buddha said, is samsara. The world is the place where birth and death occur. That's what it's for. And we're going into the spring, so we have a lot of birth occurring now. And Rain the cat is busy killing as many of the newborns as she can, which saddens me, but it's her nature. We also have an old cat in the back who's been around for 10, 12, 14 years. So his future looks pretty bleak. He's got arthritis. He sleeps a lot. And one day he'll be dead. And that's the nature of life. The nature of life is to die. So in the Buddha's explanation of salvation, he said, I have discovered four truths. That the first truth is, it's really difficult to be human, and it's really difficult to be on earth. The second truth is, the reason why humans suffer so much is because we have a desire and a craving and a thirst that can never ultimately be quenched. The third truth is, I have found the answer. I have discovered salvation for a Buddhist. Salvation for a Buddhist is called nirvana. Nirvana is the end of suffering. It's the end of karma. And the most important aspect of nirvana for our salvation is it's the end of all future rebirths. Never to have to be reborn in samsara again. And then he taught the way. He taught the way of our salvation. And it wasn't faith. It wasn't grace. It was practice. We need to practice our nirvana before it happens. So I now have a banjo. And I am in the practice mode. And one day, with enough time and practice, I'll create a performance. But the performance comes after 10,000 hours of practice. Our nirvana comes after 10,000 lifetimes, years, months, days of practice. The Buddha said we do not have to go to Bodh Gaya to achieve nirvana. We are already there. We simply lack the realization that we've always been there. We think it's someplace outside of us, and we keep looking at the map, and it's always been inside of us as a potential, which is what I call our Buddha nature. Our Buddha nature is not a soul. It's not an essence. It's not a thing. According to me, our Buddha nature is our potential for nirvana that can be realized in any moment of our life when we wake up. That's our salvation. That's our Easter, our nirvana. So how does one get there? What does it look like? What are the stages of nirvana? Well, the very first thing we need to realize is nirvana has a foundation. And the foundation of nirvana for every Buddhist turns out to be the five precepts. That's how we start our practice. We don't start our practice with meditation or chanting. We start our practice by accepting the five precepts, the five training precepts. I will train myself not to kill. I will train myself not to steal. I will train myself not to indulge in sexual misconduct. I will train myself not to speak unskillfully. I will train myself not to consume intoxicants. I will train myself. Because Reverend Shanti can't train you. I can't train you. We can only tell you what they are. And then it is up to you to decide whether you want that training or not. And if you don't want that training, that's fine. And if you do want that training, we may be able to offer some advice because some of us have been practicing the five precepts longer than others. But we're all still practicing until we achieve nirvana. At the moment of nirvana, we no longer need to practice the five precepts. We are the five precepts. Then there is a meditation aspect, the cultivation of mind. We're stuck. We have these defilements that cause us not to realize our perfection, our nirvana. And what we need to do is we need to get rid of the perfections, not gain anything, but get rid of the road bumps and signs on the path that prevent us from achieving our perfection. Buddhism is not a path of accumulation. Buddhism is a path of renunciation. If we give up all the stuff that prevents our awakening, we become awake. And there are different stages, and there are four levels of nirvana. And I was talking to a fellow just the other day who was explaining to me that according to the roadmap of nirvana, he was at the second level. He was a once returner. He had decided through observing his actions that he had gotten there. And I said to him, well, I don't know if that's really important, whether you think you're there or not. It's not who you are, it's what you do that determines where you are. It's the actions and the intentions behind the actions. So let me go into it just briefly. Not something that you want to judge yourself against, but just as a point of interest. So the very first stage of being an arhant is being a stream winner. And when we get to that point, when we wake up and realize that, number one, there is no permanent self that stands apart from mind and body. It's one of the characteristics of the stream winner. Number two, doubt in the ability of the three gems to lead us towards the goal. That all skeptical doubt is erased. We have proven everything about the Dharma in our own practice. And the Buddha said that's exactly what we need to do. We need to not believe it because he said it's to be true, or because it's on page 34 in the latest book we've been reading, but because we have doubted it and we have tested it and attested to be true. And when that happens, it is no longer faith, it is confidence. And number three, the mistaken belief that rites and rituals can make us free. Rites and rituals, and every Buddhist temple has plenty of them. Some have more than others. And it's one of the ways to create community. When you're all chanting together or meditating together, it's one of the ways we come together in our practice, But it will never make us free. It only gives us something to do on Sunday. So thank you for coming and practicing with us today. And our rites and rituals will continue after the talk. So you look at that and you go, okay, yeah, my practice is leading me in that direction. And, you know, that sense of self is becoming more transparent. It seems to be more process and event. I have no more doubt that the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha will lead me. I know for sure that if I practice what the Dharma says I am to practice, I will achieve nirvana. And no matter how many times I chant or pray, it will not make me enlightened. But it will allow me to go to heaven. So rites and rituals can get you to heaven, but they can't get you nirvana. Now we have the second stage. The second stage is the once returner. And what we find is we have less attachment to sense desire and less hatred and anger, but it's not eradicated, it's not gone. And so as we progress in our stages of nirvana, what we find is we have less until they're gone. Now, one of the interesting things for me when I started to study and analyze the four levels of being an arhant or being achieving nirvana is the fact that if you are a Buddhist teacher and you haven't yet achieved nirvana, there is still a possibility that you will find certain people very attractive, and you may have the feeling that you can seduce them and it won't matter because your desire is not fully gone. And now and then you read about Buddhist teachers who have fallen off the path, found the perfect person they've always looked for, gotten married, had children, and there you go. So what prevents a Buddhist teacher from doing that? If the desire is still there, what prevents them from doing that? It is the five precepts. It is the foundation of our practice. That's why they're there. Until we achieve nirvana, there's always a possibility we will break the precepts. So we have the five precepts, which should be recited every day when you get up, just to remind you what not to do. Buddhism is a path of renunciation. It's not about what you do, it's about what you don't do. That's how you're graded. So we need to be careful. And a Buddhist monk has 227 vows to remind them of what not to do. And once that monk or nun achieves nirvana, those vows are no longer necessary because you have attained realization, the exact same realization that the Buddha attained 2,600 years ago. In the third stage of the non-returner, attachment to sense desire and ill will are completely taken away, eradicated, pulled out by the roots, no longer able to materialize or manifest again. So you're getting close now. You're at the third level, okay? No self, no rites and rituals, no skeptical doubt, no sense desire, no anger or hatred. Okay. Then we go to the fourth stage of nirvana, the stage of the arahant. You get rid of the desire for existence in the world of form. Okay, what does that mean? That means that a lot of people think of non-existence as being nothing. The Buddha never said it was nothing. You know? So, it's not wanting to come back as anything in a form way. Not wanting to come back as a dog or a cat, a human, or a president, or a teacher. You realize that every kind of form ultimately leads to suffering. Desire for existence in the formless worlds. Now you've gotten rid of your desire to be reborn in the heavenly realms with no form, with just consciousness. But you realize even in the formless realms of existence, there is still suffering. There is still impermanence. There is still unsatisfactoriness. So the arhant has no desire to be reborn in form or in formlessness. Finally, number eight, as an arhant, there's no more conceit. There's no more conceit. Somebody says you're the best monk that ever lived. The arhant just walks away. Doesn't accept the praise, doesn't accept the blame, no longer relevant. He no longer exists in the way everybody else exists. Number nine, no longer has restlessness or worry. Those are gone. There's a sense of peace that has taken over. Equanimity, perfect balance. And finally, number 10, ignorance. Wisdom. He has no more ignorance. He has no more delusion. She has no more ignorance. She has no more delusion. She now has clarity, insight, wisdom. He now has clarity, insight, wisdom. Women and men have the same realization. One is not more, one is not less. In nirvana, everything is the same. That is our salvation. Our salvation is not found in Jesus arising from the grave. Our salvation is found in the end of our suffering, the end of our karma, and the end of all future rebirth. And it was laid out to us, the prescription was given to us by the historical Buddha. We call that prescription the Dharma. That allows us to be free. Free from suffering. Free from rebirth. Now, I want to add this. I think this is important. Our job is not to end our existence. Our job as a Buddhist is to exist in a unique way. Our job is to exist because of nirvana, not because of creation. Everything in this world of samsara was created. And because it was created, it will ultimately be destroyed. Everything. I think the Buddha found a way to exist without being born. I think the Buddha exists right now in nirvana. And all the arahants before and after him also exist in nirvana. And if that is the case, that existence is not determined by a first cause, a beginning, by creation. They say about nirvana, it is unborn and undying. And if you can find a way to exist in nirvana without being born, you will never have to die, you will never have to be reborn, and you will never suffer again. Happy Easter.